You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is your host, Jess Root. And on the line with me is Seth Cox as we start our all-Cardinals show recording on a Tuesday night following a fantastic, just absolute, complete and utter beatdown of the San Francisco 49ers as the Arizona Cardinals roll to a 47-7 victory over the 49ers at home on Sunday. I don't know if I've ever seen a game like that from the Cardinals from start to finish ever. But, oh my heavens, Cardinals fans, we have so much to talk about. And it, pretty much every single bit of it is as good as the Cardinals sit kind of on top of the world here at 3-0. The national media has started to buy in, you know, even on ESPN talk shows in the middle of the afternoon. On Monday, there was the question, you see who's the best team in football, and it shows a Cardinals helmet and a Patriots helmet. It's a good time to be a Cardinals fan, isn't it, Seth?
Yes, sir, it is. It's a different scenario than even the last, you know, what, four years when we've seen a couple 3-0 starts. It's a different type of 3-0 so far.
It is, and welcome back, Seth, as always. We're talking all Cardinals tonight. Again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio, brought to you tonight, or today if you're listening to it, by Audible.com, the Internet's leading audio content provider, where you can get a download and download all sorts of podcasts and audiobooks. And for Revenge of the Birds Radio listeners, we have a special right now, as we always do. Give Audible.com a try, and you'll get a free audiobook download, as I'm tripping over my words this show. So yes, you can get a free audiobook download by signing up for audible.com, giving it a test run. Go to audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds. That's audibletrial.com/revengeofthebirds. Get yourself a free audiobook download. Test out the service. It is pretty dang good, especially if you ever do any sort of driving of distances, and even if you have kids, it's a wonderful thing. So, what we're going to talk about today, there's really not much in the way of news. The news coming out of the Cardinals on Monday, no new injuries. Andre Ellington and Mike Iupati, they hope will be back this week when the Cardinals play the Rams on Sunday at University of Phoenix Stadium. J.J. Nelson, probably not. Bobby Massie is back. He got the start. That was what happened. The Cardinals decided to bring back, not when he was reinstated, start Bobby Massie again over Earl Watford, citing pass protection being the main thing. He played on Sunday, didn't have a bad game at all. A couple of mishaps overall, but played a solid game. Mike Iupati ended up not starting. He was real close, but he actually was the one who held himself out of the game. Hopefully he'll be good to go for the Rams on Sunday. So what we have to talk about tonight is, well, after a drubbing like that, I mean, it was thoroughly dominant. The Cardinals held the 49ers to, you know, so few yards. They intercepted Colin Kaepernick four times. They they held Carlos Hyde to 51 yards, although it was on 5 yards a carry. But of total offense, only 106 yards of total offense, only gave up the one touchdown, and that was kind of sort of pinned on a bad Drew Butler punt. The Cardinals rushed for 139 yards. They threw for over 300 yards. They had Carson Palmer over 300 yards passing, Larry Fitzgerald over 100 yards receiving, Chris Johnson over 100 yards rushing. Both Fitzgerald and Johnson had two touchdowns apiece. Justin Bethlehem, Tyrann Mathieu returned two interceptions for a touchdown. There was so much good to that game. Now, the question is, Seth, is there anything bad that you can really point out? I mean, really, is there anything bad that you can come away from that game and say, okay, other than absolute nitpicking, is there anything that stood out as this, like, is there a weakness right now?
You know, I think the one thing that I take away from every game so far is that you still want to see a little more from a pass rush being generated. Kent Hodder, I don't know how to say his name, to be completely honest. He's from New Zealand, so I don't think it matters. he tweeted out something that's interesting. You know, the Cardinals use basically 7 DBs because, you know, Dale Buchanan is playing the linebacker position. So they use 7 DBs probably close to 35 to 40% of the time. I haven't actually done the numbers. But, you know, and you watch that, and they're blitzing a lot, right? So what happens when they have a team, you know, that they actually face that can throw the ball? We thought maybe we'd see that against Pittsburgh.
But not anymore.
I doubt we will. Like, you never know, because we saw Mike Vick, what was that, 4 years ago? Man, that was so long ago. It doesn't even seem like it was, but it was so long ago. But, yeah, we saw Mike Vick, 4 or 5 years ago, come in and do the stopgap thing after he was the backup and light it up just for, you know, a whole season. So maybe that happens again, but like you said, I doubt it. Probably not. So I don't think we're really going to know how dominant this pass defense is. Maybe until, I don't know. I mean, when? And it's not even like a bad thing. It's just
Green Bay, week 16.
Yeah, I mean, week 16. Like, seriously, yeah. Could it be week 16 before we're like, is this pass defense any good? Because there's not really a passing game that you look at it and go, wow, you know, they're going to have to be prepped for that. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the one, you know, like you say, if you want to pick out something to say you don't know, I think that'd be it. Just because, I mean, the throws that were intercepted, you know, the Colin Kaepernick throws that were intercepted, those weren't even, like, great plays.
Those were just terrible throws. Awful throws.
And the two pick sixes were just awful decisions. But then the Tyrann Mathieu and the, who had the other? Jarrod Powers interceptions. They were just terribly thrown balls. Like, even if you go back and kind of look, did he have open guys on those two interceptions? And he literally threw the ball to the defender. It was almost like he had money on the game. He's like, oh, we're cool. We're getting a little too close. Let's get this back. But, yeah, I mean, that was one of the more – I talked about it, you know, in Chicago, what I saw. I think that game against San Francisco was even better. Now, I still like the Chicago performance more because it was on the road, but I will understand why everybody will prefer this performance, especially because it was against San Francisco. And, you know, we hate San Francisco, even though – they're basically garbage now as a second team.
And we will enjoy their garbage performance because it's California, it's San Francisco, it's the Niners, and oh my gosh, the fan base. Now, I do know some very good Niners fans. That's not to bunch them all, but kind of that whole thing. You know, don't fall for it. Those San Francisco fans aren't terribly different than Oakland fans. They just don't dress themselves into scary black and silver stuff. But they're equally not so very nice fans.
No, they're awful. There are a lot of awful 49ers fans. But you know what? I heard that there's only like one incident at the game. There might have been more, just unreported. But I heard there was only like one incident at the game. So props to whoever the 49ers fans that showed up were, that you conducted yourself, you know, with normalcy, I guess.
They're probably just, you know, they had no reason to get cocky at all because, you know, they're getting their lunch handed to them. But for me, really the one thing that stood out to me, the pass rush, no, they weren't finishing, so they got a couple of sacks. I mean, they got the one by Lamar Woodley who was, he just decided not to to bite on the play fake and just stood there, and he happened to be standing there. Colin saw him, just, oh crap, and just lay down on the ground. The punting game, you know, the Drew Butler decision to keep him on the roster for Arizona Cardinals fans is one of the more puzzling decisions, because in our minds we see playoff Drew Butler, we see the blocked punts from a year ago, we saw the bad punts. Statistically, had a pretty average season last year. But then you see him, you know, he's not consistent. He's got the ability to do it, and maybe this year the Cardinals can get away with it because their offense is going to be good enough, so they don't need a dynamic punter the way Zastadil was a couple of years ago. But he's super inconsistent. The only points the 49ers had were as a result of an awfully short punt by Butler, and then Jerod Hayne happened to, you know, catch it in stride and take it almost to the house himself. So, you know, if it's not for that punt return, the Cardinals maybe shut those 49ers out. It's really, other than that, I mean, you could point to the penalties by Jared Vildier in that one drive where he had the holding penalty that negated the Michael Floyd, that really, really good-looking catch that he had, which is, I don't have, you know, that's Michael Floyd's game, is, you know, in traffic, high point the ball, catch it, come down. That's sort of what he does. But it negated that. He had a couple of false starts. We'll talk a little bit about the crowd noise becoming a factor. But other than that, I mean, everything is sort of nitpicking. They ran the ball well. They threw the ball well. While they didn't really have a great pass rush, they were getting pressure on Kaepernick. Those two pick sixes in particular showed where the pressure was affecting him. The first throw that Justin Bethel did, you could see that Frosty Rucker was getting in his face. He was there. He makes a leap, and it causes Kaepernick to change how he's throwing the ball, and it throws it off his back foot, and it's just a bad throw. The other one, he had pressure coming right at him, and so he tries to get the ball away quickly. And so the pressure was there. They did a pretty good job of containing him. I mean, he did scramble for, you know, over 40, I think it was 46 yards. A lot of those 7-yard run and scramble and slide. But he didn't hurt them the way he did with his legs a year ago in their week 3 game against the 49ers last year. But other than that, goodness.
Now, they only had the one read option play that I can remember. They might have had more, but I can only remember the one where...
when he scored, Okafor, it
was... Yeah, Okafor took... I mean, he went like he was going to crash on the running back, and he didn't. And then Minter
exposed, and he bit inside just for moments, and that was all it needed.
Yeah, and I mean, you can definitely, if you want to, like, go into a single out type thing where I think it's fair to say, based on probably over zealous expectations, Alex Okafor has underperformed this year for 3 games. I know he's got the 2 sacks, but I'm pretty sure one of them was similar to Lamar Woodley's sack, where, you know, he just was at the right place at the right time. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to really 47-7. It's hard to nitpick. I think you hit it on the head with Drew Butler, though. I just went through my archives and I can't find it, but I swore I wrote something in the draft about punters to look at, And there was a reason why, and you know, we saw it with the Eagles kicker, Corey Parkey or whatever his name is, that, you know, he's got a groin next year, and so he's on the IR for the year, similar to Jacksonville last year. And then, you know, obviously we've seen Drew Butler for almost a full season now, or a little.
Oh, crap. Well, let me get Seth back on the line. I inadvertently, you know, dropped him. Ah, sorry about that. I clicked the wrong thing and hung up on you. Continue.
Well, no, I was just saying, we saw it with Corey Parkey now and then Jacksonville last year. Those groin injuries basically are a death knell for a kicker. So, you know, I was shocked Butler made the team. I shouldn't say I was shocked he made the team. I was shocked he didn't bring anybody else other than Jacksonville in to challenge him. And now it's kind of like almost too late. Like, you don't want to mess up the rapport that Butler and Catanzaro have. So you're kind of stuck with it, you know. But like you said, if we're talking about punters, and,
right,
you know,
and if they have a good offense and he's actually punting from about midfield, he's really good about placing that ball right inside the 10, inside the 5. That's something he's really good at. He's just not real good about, you know, Ben Graham. Ben Graham was really good at pinning, but he wasn't good at distance. We've seen somebody, he's super inconsistent. Butler's super inconsistent with the deep punts. He's really good about on the short kicks from midfield, skying them up high so that Jerron Brown or Justin Bethel can get down inside the 10 to and inside the 5 to catch or down the ball. It would have been a third down inside the 10, inside the 5, had, you know, Bethel been able to track that ball right. And he did get bumped a little bit by one of the coverage guys. But, you know, as long as the offense is, it'll be an issue if the offense sputters at all in a tough game. That could become an issue. But until then, we'll live with it, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, it's hopefully, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but hopefully we see that this week. Like, that is one thing you do want to see eventually, is that the Cardinals get punched in the mouth and to see then how they respond. Because it seems really easy right now, right? Like, the Bears game seemed like it was on easy mode. And
well, even the Saints game, it was kind of close at some point. The Cardinals haven't. They've led the entire part that is just lucky and, you know, winning the toss and getting down the field and scoring, but they haven't faced any adversity. They haven't trailed. They haven't really.
Yeah.
They've been in control of every game. And I kind of expect the same thing to happen this week, too. But.
Oh, yeah.
At some point, they're going to face adversity. I'm not terribly worried about it because they're so. I mean, you know, the Patriots kind of look this equally good, so. and they're consistently. You don't worry about what happens in close games. Well, they perform. They're not in a lot of close games because they're just freaking good, and that's so far the Cardinals. Now let's point out something. I say this kind of jokingly, but is it 2009? Now, yes, the Cardinals were good in 2009, but let's just look at this. The Chris Johnson, age 30. 110 yards on the ground. Larry Fitzgerald, 9 catches for 130-something and 2 touchdowns. Carson Palmer, throwing for over 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. Playing at really good high levels. And Mark Dalton tweeted this stat out from the Cardinals media relations. He tweeted out that it's the first time since the Raiders in 2002 have had a 300-yard passer, 100-yard receiver, and 100-yard rusher all at least 30 years old. But did anyone anywhere envision these three players? Maybe Fitz, but even last year, everyone was kind of saying, well, Fitz is kind of done. He's kind of a symbolic figurehead now of the offense, third down guy. But these three are showing to be, you know, playing at a much, at a level much younger than their age, but doing it at a time in their career when pretty much, you know, they're players that a lot of people thought were washed up. Carson Palmer was washed up before he came to the Cardinals. Really, he sort of was. Chris Johnson, no, he was on the streets, unsigned. Larry Fitzgerald, everyone was sort of buried and left him for dead, thinking that, you know, this John Brown, back in 2013, we both were saying Michael Floyd's taken over as the best receiver. John Brown's the new number one this year. But what do you see? It's Fitz. Where are we?
And yeah,
what universe are we in?
I think you look at it and you see that teams are really focused on John Brown, and it's really opened up Larry's offensive abilities. And I think it's going to do is it's going to eventually balance out. Like, clearly, Fitz is not going to keep up this pace because it's at, I think, like 1,700 yards. And
122 catches, almost 1,800 yards, and 27 touchdowns. Come on.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah, but even if he, I mean, you don't want to say half, but even if he gets, you know, even if he's at close to 100 and 1,200 and, you know, 12, that's a huge season for a 32-year-old running back or wide receiver. Excuse me.
And everyone thought was just a glorified tight end anymore.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, he's getting a lot of coverages on linebackers and safety. So why, like, maybe other teams think the same thing. And so, you know, he's taking advantage. And the Cardinals are taking advantage. Just, you know, Floyd played a little bit more this week. He still struggled. He had the one catch that wasn't a catch again. So, and then, you know, John Brown, I think that's six for like 67. You know, that's only on pace for 86 catches and or 96 catches and 1,100 yards. Nothing big, you know. But, but I mean, like, I think it's going to balance out eventually with Brown and Fitz. I think they're going to kind of go back and forth all year because eventually the teams are going to have to go, okay, we can't just keep putting a linebacker or an extra safety on Larry Fitzgerald because he's going to continue to eat us alive. So let's put a corner and then all of a sudden you got single coverage on Brown and that's going to change up everything.
Yeah. One interesting thing that Bruce Arians talked about is, and I think something that, aside from the health, he's healthy, Carson Palmer's healthy, they're comfortable in the offense. Fitz is really buying into his role, and Bruce Arians is really sort of the vision that he had for what Fitz was going to do, because if you remember 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago, whatever, the beginning of the BA said if he wants to catch 100 balls, he needs to be able to play inside because now he's got all these favorable matchups. This is exactly what he's doing. And he talked about the play-action game. And I charted it. I noticed it the first week. Four of his six catches came off play action. I think the play action game, the ability that the Cardinals are actually having of being able to run the ball, is improving Fitz's ability to get these matchups because they're using him a ton in play action. Because on that play action, then he gets that mismatch and ends up wide open in the middle of the field. I don't get it, but the play action game is so much better, and that's where he's getting used. He's getting used in third down. A guy that's doing right there at the sticks, and then he said he's doing a good job of getting involved in the red zone, and that's really good for Fitz. It's really, I mean, this is what I think Bruce Arians envisioned for Fitz in 2013, and he just had the injuries that he had, the hamstring issue that really hampered him down the stretch, and once he was starting to get but now what Reggie Wayne did under BA after he moved positions, this is the sort of thing that Fitz is doing, because what are you going to do? You've got Fitz playing in the slot, so are you going to cover him with a regular DB? But what happens on play action? They might run the ball, and like you said, you got John Brown with single coverage down the field. He's going to beat everyone. I don't see why it can't. I mean, I don't think it's going to be, you know, 1,600-yard season, but I can totally see this being a 1,300-yard season for him, even though you just look and like, because he's not winning one-on-one matchups like he used to. He's not getting separation. It's just that the scheme is winning things for him.
Well, and he still runs really crisp and clean routes.
Yes.
And he's able to, you know, do nuanced things that young receivers can't do. Even Brown. I mean, Brown doesn't create a ton of separation, you know, in the intermediate route unless he's already one deep. So, and we've all, you know, I've said my piece on Floyd plenty of times, and it holds true. Like, his one, you know, big play again was, what, a jump ball, right? So,
yep.
I mean, that's the problem. Like, people don't get, one, the importance of route running because so many athletes are playing wide receiver now as opposed to, you know, being athletic wide receivers. But when you have a guy like Fitz, like Reggie Wayne was, like you said, even Hines Ward, hell, I mean, you go back to Hines Ward in that BA offense, and he was producing 900 to 1,100 yards a season, and dude was running like a 5.2. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like he was out there burning guys. It's just the ability to understand coverages, work routes, set up your routes. But to go back to your point on what they envision in 13, you know, and the injuries and things like that, one of the biggest things, and DA talked about it today or yesterday on one of the local shows, I can't remember which one, but he talked about, you know, he's learned the position, and what people don't understand a lot of times, and you know, even somebody like me who knows a little bit about the game, it's hard to switch positions when you've done something your whole life, right? So we talked about Jonathan Cooper moving over to right guard. Dude's been a left guard since, like, he was, you know, I think he played left guard in, like, almost every start in his college career. I think he had a couple at center, and it was awful. But now he's asked to play right guard. He's been, like, okay, but he's learning a whole new position, and it's entirely different footwork. It's, you know, relearning how calls and angles and things like that. And at the wide receiver position, it's the same thing. You don't just go line up on the right side and go, well, I've always lined up on the left side, but I'm just going to line up on the right side now. It messes with your steps. It messes with your stance from the start. You know, you have to have your feet right. So when you're running, you know, a 10-yard out, you hit the 10-yard and you're able to plant with your left foot and go outside. Or if you're, you know, running an end, you're able to plant with your right foot and cut inside. Like, it's all nuanced, and it took time for Larry to kind of rediscover how he's supposed to play football. And you know, I definitely agree with everybody talking about the hamstring injuries and just how they nagged him for, you know, almost 2 years. And he does look a little healthier. Like you said, he doesn't look as explosive as he did back in the day. But he knows his concepts now. He's comfortable in the position now. You can see it. You can see a confidence in what he's doing that wasn't there before. All of a sudden, you know, there's not hands being thrown up by Pitts and Palmer going, okay, what did you see, dude? Because I didn't see that. I went this way. You threw the ball this way. Like, what's going on? You see that with other guys still, but you don't see that with those two. And I think, you know, we expected, because Reggie Wayne did it in 1 year, so we expected to do it in 1 year. But, no, I mean, everybody learns at a different rate. And as great as a receiver as it was and is, you know, it was going to take time. And being, you know, the nagging injury and the timing and then the Palmer injury last year, because he was in it last year. I mean, let's be honest. I think he was on pace for like 1,300 last year before Palmer got hurt. So, I mean, he was in it last year, and now it's just kind of carrying over. So let's just hope they stay healthy.
And Chris Johnson, it's, you know, he has been exactly what you said he would be. One thing, again, and Carson Palmer noted, I believe what I saw, I have to go back through my notes, but I believe of his 22 carries, again, there was only one negative play. And
yeah.
it's another case of we haven't seen that. We just haven't seen that in the Cardinals running game. And he's not a power runner, but he does, even on a bad play that looks like it's going to be a negative, he manages to get 1 or 2 yards out of it. And so you don't end up with, you know, 2nd and 12. You end up with 2nd and 8, which, you know, is just that much better. It keeps you all, and even on those plays, it keeps you, like you say, almost on time with your playbook and your plays. And, you know, maybe it was just, I don't know what it is. And I was actually talking to Adam Greed about it in the locker room yesterday, is national perception, the talk about Carson Palmer and his perception around the league. Chris Johnson was another one, and I pointed out there's a lot of things. One, he's always been perceived as a me guy for some reason. The image, he, you know, being a young black man, and then going along with the dreadlocks and the gold teeth.
It's, I was going to say, didn't he used to have the grill?
He still does. Still does. But, I mean, that's a thing that image-wise, I guess it hurts him. I don't know what it is, but then when you meet him, he's one of the guys in the locker room when a reporter talks. He gives open, honest answers. He's not standoffish. And you look, is working. And I said the important, one of the biggest important, I didn't realize he's going to be as productive as he. You were like, yeah, he's the best running back in that room. Is the fact that what he adds to that running back room is so critical, because you've got a really young David Johnson, and you've got an Andre Ellington who has every single year nagged with injuries and is missing practice time all the time. Just a workmanlike attitude. He is a solid pickup, and I'm interested to see how they're going to mix that up, because both, and I asked the question of BAs, it's, you know, a good problem to have, because Chris Johnson likes to tote and tote and tote and tote, and he said that Andre Ellington's the same way. Andre Ellington is a very quietly super confident guy. He's got the same sort of mentality that the big name running backs. He wants the ball in his hands, and he wants to have it a lot.
And he can want that, but, like, dude's got to stay on the field, right? I hope he proves me wrong. I think I was wrong about that. I think I was wrong about the free Ellington thing. I think his usage of, you know, like a 10-carry, five reception back, and give Johnson the 20 carries and just, you know, call it a day. And I'm okay with whatever they do, obviously, but I think, you know, like I said all along, I think Chris is just the best actual running back right now in the group. David, you know, we saw it this week finally. Like, you know, he didn't get the magical play where he touched the ball and scored a touchdown.
Yeah, what is that? He didn't even score a touchdown. I'm disappointed. He's a bust.
But, I mean, he actually had to work for his yards this week. Like, dude had to go put in some work. So it was good. I just think, you know, like I said along, I think Johnson's still the best running back. Like, pure running back, understands the game, understands how to get the cheap yardage. He's not going to hit a home run. I think he had one big play I don't even know if it was a pass play to him.
He had a 40-yard pass play.
I think it was a check down by Palmer.
Yeah, and well, it was actually, I happened to catch it on the screen in the locker room. They happened to point out it was a really smart play by Johnson. He went out and chipped Navarro Bowman, so he put a body on him, and then just wandered out into the flat and had all sorts of room. It was a really heady play by him as a back, picking up blitz and then hitting the flat. The other one that was actually his biggest play, I believe, was the 30-yard run. And it was, he had a 30-yard, he had a 15-yard. I believe the 30-yard one was on a penalty, that it was on an offsides penalty. And the flag went, the defense went light, and then he just ran.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like I said, he's not the home run threat he was 5 years ago when, you know, he's PJ Touche. He's, it's just, you know, it's the mileage. Like, dude, you know, it's like my car I got to work. It's got 150,000 miles on it. Like, it's fine getting to and from work, but I'm not going to get any street races in it. Like, you know, it's going to get me to and from work. It's got AC. You know, it brings the leak every once in a while, but it's reliable, and it's going to get you to where you need to be. That's what Chris Johnson is now. Like, he's reliable. You can count on him. And like I've said every week, he's going to keep your offense on time. You need a home run. That's when David Johnson and, you know, coming back Andre Ellington come in. But if you need a guy that's just going to continue to move the chains at 4.2 or 4.3 yards per carry, CJ's your man. And I think, you know, like I said, like, let the dude tilt the rock, wear down. He's on a one-year deal. I mean this without any disrespect possible, but run the guy into the ground and then pick up another one next year. Like, that's just, unless you have an Adrian Peterson or a Le'Veon Bell, you know, and there's some other guys too, obviously, but unless you have one of those freaks of nature who can carry the ball 280, 300, you know, 20 times a year and then come back and do it again the next year, just keep churning them out, because they're third, fourth round picks. They're free agents. Like, just bring them in, wear them out, and then get a new one. You know, and that's kind of my philosophy now. So that's just how I see it. But like you said, he's produced really well, even above what I thought he could do. I didn't see him being, you know, 110-yard a game, and he's not, obviously, got 110-yard, two-touchdown type of game. I thought, you know, maybe that's his high side, I guess. And I tweeted that out. I think what you saw in the 49ers game is, like, his ceiling, and what you saw in the Bears game is kind of his floor. And I think that's where he's going to work if he gets the bulk of the carries. He's going to work in that, you know, 70 to 110-yard range on 20 carries. And sometimes it'll be 3.5 yards per game. Sometimes it'll be 5.5 yards.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's going to even out to right around that 4.2, 4.3. And I think you can just count on him.
Now, Carson Palmer, I think we can say that he is, at being healthy, being steady now in the third year with the system, that we're probably looking at the same Carson Palmer, talent-wise and now performance-wise, that people saw roughly 10 years ago when he was emerging as one of the elite quarterbacks. Only he was an elite young quarterback before he got hurt. Now we're seeing that same Carson Palmer, only a wiser one, with better winning talent around him without the headaches. And it's finally there. This is the quarterback that people were expecting when he was drafted first overall. A guy who can perform at these elite levels. And he's finally here. It just took a long while. It took a while because he was in a mess in Cincinnati. He took on an owner, had his reputation tarnished, ended up with the Raiders, had a mess there. And, you know, over the last few years has gone from being, you know, a malcontent to selfish to injury prone to washed up. And now he's at the top of the game. You know, he's, you know, and we've said this, I've said this before, especially. He's a top 10 quarterback in talent who has had a decent career. Now he's got all the pieces around him, and he's performing like a top 5 quarterback.
No, I mean, yeah, you're right. He's performing at the highest level of his career. Maybe I think it was like 06. I think it was the year he blew out his knee, so whenever that was, maybe that was 05, I'm not sure, but that, you know, that was his best thing. But even then, he was still, you know, he threw a ton of interceptions. And I think that's the thing that's changed the most is that, and I think it has come with age, to be honest. I think the fact that his arm is kind of weakened, and he won't admit that, but, like, his arm has, you know, weakened. So now, maybe he doesn't trust his arm quite as much, so he's going to make the safer throw, right? Like, that seems to be, like, even from year one to now in Arizona, I feel like you see that. Like, he's not taking the chances on throws. And when he is taking the chances, he's usually taking them
safely
on on throws to a jump ball to Michael Floyd or a deep ball to John Brown, where, you know, he's 4 yards past the guy and he can't quite throw that far anymore, you know, or stuff like that. So I think that's where he's playing right now. He's playing at a level where athletically he's not at where he used to be, but mentally he's so far above, and that was never a question of Carson, but he's so far above where he's been and trusts himself and trusts his receivers. You know, I forget who it was that dropped the pass, and I think it was David Johnson that dropped the pass, and then like three plays later he went back to David Johnson. And that's just a trust thing. Like, you have to trust your guys. And I think he trusts everybody. I think he knows the offense. But I think also he's at the point where he knows he does have some physical limitations. So maybe I shouldn't push that ball down the field. You know what? I'll just take that 12-yard out and let my guy go and, you know, make the play after the catch instead of trying to hit that, you know, 25-yard post. It's just simple things like that that just come with age, experience, and I'm glad that, you know, he's at a really, really high level of confidence. And I think outside of the top two, Brady and of course, the Mr. Negative Aaron Rodgers, I think, you know, only really consistently Big Ben was in the same conversation. And now, you know, I don't know how many guys you look at and go, yeah, I'll take it. I mean, Luck's struggling. I think Cam Newton probably, because he's doing it with Ted Ginn Jr. We saw that dumpster fire here last year. But, I mean, outside of it, yeah, I mean, what, 3-4 quarterbacks right now that you say, okay, maybe I'll take them over Carson. But that's that's a huge leap from even last year when he was playing well. For now,
I wanted to talk a little bit about Kaepernick. I'm going to skip over that. We don't need to talk about Kaepernick. He looked like a dumpster fire. I've never seen a quarterback seem quite so. And to me, I've never seen a quarterback really, except for maybe Jake Delhomme, just look so lost out there. But I don't really want to talk about that. Let's move on to another conversation. That would be Bobby Massey. They cited pass protection. He gets in there. The Cardinals do give up a sack, finally. And Pro Football Focus, you know, gave credit him for only 2 hurries. Over the first 2 games, I believe Earl Watford had given up a total of 9 total pressures between hits and hurries. And Bobby Massey comes in, gives up only due to 2 hurries. How would you say that the decision was? And I have a guy I talked to about some things about the game, and I essentially told him, you know, it's basically a wash. In my opinion, playing Watford over Massey, Massey over Watford is pretty much a wash. One's a little better than this, one's another than that. But maybe the decision one way or another doesn't really change the outlook of a game, in my opinion. How do you think that, was it the right call? Should they go with Massey moving forward? And how do you think of his play overall?
I think that you kind of hit it on the head. It's a wash. And so to me, and this is just me, and this is my long-term thinking brain type thing, and I do this and everything. To me, if it's a wash, just let Watford play. Then at least you know you have 2016 as well. That's just my thought. But if it's the same thing, I think we saw a little bit. Watford's, I know Chris Johnson had 110 yards rushing, so don't get your panties in a bunch. Revenge the Birds. But Watford was better in the run game, and Matthews, you know, a little better in the pass game, and so it evens out. I think you can make the call that because Matthews is slightly an upgrade in pass protection, it's probably more important to what the Cardinals need to do on offense to not have Palmer get hit. So you can justify, it's not even justified, but you can make it in that way where it makes more sense to play Massey. But I'm, you know, if it's a wash, let Watford play, because Massey's going to be gone next year anyway. Like, I don't know, I guess you could pay him, but then you're the Bengals and you wasted a pick on a offensive lineman in the first round. So I don't know if you saw that, but the Bengals signed Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle, to a contract extension after they drafted two first round or two offensive tackles in the first couple rounds of the draft. So.
Well, and that might have been just because, you know, something to throw some money at him this year and know that he might not be back. Who knows? But we look at the running game. Obviously, the running game, where they rushed the ball 39 times for 139 yards. It's working this year. And Bruce Arians cited several things. He said, obviously, there's been a greater emphasis on running the ball. They're better up front. The tight ends have improved, so you don't have, you know, John Carlson and trying to block. Now you've got Darren Fells, who's not super consistent about it, but when he does block, when he whiffs, but when he gets on a guy, he's good. Got Jermaine Gresham, he's more than capable. He cited the receivers are better blockers this year. They're doing a good job in kind of buying into the team factor, because especially since in the passing game, the running backs have to chip and pass block as well. And so the receivers are buying in and doing their part to help in the running game. I think the biggest factor overall is having healthy, talented running backs. I don't want to take anything away from Kerwin Williams and what he did last year, but there's a reason why no one picked him up. I mean, he's just a running back who's got some talent, but you had a healthy Andre Ellington in the first game. You have a healthy Chris Johnson. And last year, they lost Jonathan Dwyer. They lost, and Andre Ellington wasn't healthy all year. And so he was not in a good place. Dwyer goes down. Then they're using Stephon Taylor. Then they're using Kerwin Williams. The biggest thing they have consistently on the front line, and the talent's just better. They're running the ball better because they have their top line running backs. And you know, I don't know how that's going to play out once Ellington is back, but I kind of like having that. And then you're able to ride the hot hand a little bit more. Oh, CJ's picking up some chunks, leave him in there. Then you don't really see a drop down when one guy steps in for the other when they're in the ball game.
Yeah, and I think this week is kind of the first real test they'll have in run blocking and obviously pass blocking, because that Rams defensive line is ridiculous. But
just assassins.
Yeah, don't let anybody get near them. But yeah, you know, I think Larson's been surprisingly steady. Cooper, you know, he plays with his hair on fire, and I think that gets fans fired up. I had that conversation with a friend, and that's what I said. I think fans really enjoy Cooper's style of play. I don't think he's as good right now as fans are making him out to be. But he's not bad by any means. Like, it's not a knock on him, but I don't think he's as good as everybody is making him out to be. I just think that the fact that he is downfield a lot, you know, they ask him to pull a ton, so you see him moving all the time. And so it's a lot of fun to watch him play. Finland's actually the one that's been the most surprising to me. I mean, we know what we had in Velbier, and so I don't think anybody's surprised by his dominance at left tackle in the run game. But, yeah, Finland actually played very physically at the point of attack, and I think that's been the most surprising thing to me, is that you're getting a little push out of the middle now, and so all of a sudden you're getting a little push out of the middle. You already had a strong, you know, edge blocker in Velbier, and Massey's not bad in the run game, so all of a sudden you're getting a push in, you know, four or five positions as opposed to one or two. So it makes the, and like I said, you have some healthy running backs with DJ and DJ, so things are getting a little a little more enjoyable to watch.
One of an interesting comment, and it kind of played into some of the offensive line play, is Bruce Arians noted this. The crowd, he mentioned it Sunday, and he mentioned it on Monday, that the crowd noise was an issue at home on offense, that the noise, in particular from the opposing fans, I don't know if it was opposing fans or not, but made it so that the tackles couldn't hear their count, and so they had to go to a silent count. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because they do that on the road all the time, but it's not something you expect to do. And that was the case with Jared Valdir's two false starts. It was the one play where Massey got beat really bad. It's that he couldn't hear the count, so he got off the line slow, and so the defender already blew by him. Interestingly enough, Arians talked about, there's the discussion about tickets again, saying that the 49ers fan had way too many tickets. That's a hard thing to handle because they travel really well. They got a ton of fans here because the 49ers have been good historically, and, we didn't have a good team that was here historically, especially during the first few years of the Cardinals. They were just terrible, and the 49ers were dynasty good. But I think it was, and in fairness, I think the Arizona Cardinals fan base gets a little too amped too much for offensive plays. When big good things happen on offense, they cheer and they're raucous, but they don't get down in time. I think Arians was just choosing his words wisely, because we know very well that telling fans that they're not doing it right isn't always a bad idea here in Arizona. So I think he was just choosing his words wisely. But it is an interesting thing. The fans go bonkers anytime Larry touches the ball and then start cheering Larry, Larry. But then on the next play, then they can't hear the snap count. I don't know. It's kind of a problem, but it's not really a problem all at once.
One of the things that comes with, I guess, the youngness is of, the 1988 predating those, back in St. Louis and whatnot. The youngness is the fact that most of these fans, let's be honest, started paying attention when they moved into the new stadium. And that's not a shot at anybody. That's completely okay. So you're talking about people that have really been fans for, 8, 9 years maybe? And so they're still learning the nuances of actually being fans at the game. It's always going to be an issue in Arizona with, the transient community that we have. It's always going to be an issue with other people being at games. I have a friend that his wife is a Packers fan, and they've already bought tickets for the Packers game. And they know 400 people that are going. There's a Facebook group of fans that are going to the Cardinals game. So, when Green Bay's here, when San Francisco's here, if Chicago had come to town instead, Detroit last year, we sat up in the upper deck with my kids, and we were in a section. There's probably 200 to 300 in that section Detroit fans.
Hey, that was one of your kids was that, too, so.
Exactly.
you're doing a bad job of raising a kid, Seth. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of what it is. There's a lot of non-Cardinals fans here, and then the Cardinals fans that are here, they're still learning. They're still learning how to shut up after a big play, because now you're down inside, your red zone, and you need to be able to hear the call from the quarterback on audibles. Hey, we want to run a fade, but we called it a dive in the huddle. Shut up, you can't say that. But that's kind of what it is. It'll come. Like I said, you've got a fan base that's about 9 years old in reality.
And a reputation of a stadium that's being really loud. So what do fans do? They want to be really loud. They're just choosing not the best times to do it.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just what is youth? Youth is stupidity, and that's, you know, they'll learn as they get older, and it'll happen slowly but surely. I'm sure it'll get better, especially as the damning god that is Bruce Arians continues to complain about it to the media.
final topic. So the Cardinals start. They play this weekend against their second division game in a row. They'll play the New St. Louis Rams, or as we know them as the quarterback assassins, dating back to 2012 when they had the 9-sack performance that essentially ended Kevin Cobb's career. It didn't happen then. It happened the next week. Following that, you saw last year both Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton going down, and just last weekend, just to remind everyone, that would be Ben Roethlisberger, who now is injured. What to expect for the Rams? They're a team that's not very good on the road. I mean, they beat the Seahawks at home and then lost to the Redskins on the road. Part of that was probably a little too overconfident, but at the same time, no, this is a very physical defensive line. The offensive line is trying not to talk too much about it. That way they don't, you know, hype themselves up or get it in their heads that the defensive line is really good before they even play the game, because they still have to play the game. Although, as we learned with Washington, you can run the ball on this team. And if the Cardinals can run the ball at all, that will really open things up. Anything of concern? I'm not terribly concerned offensively on the offensive side of the ball for the Rams, because their line is bad. And Nick Foles doesn't look like he's much. I don't know. I'm not terribly worried. I just hope that they're not. They don't. I don't think. I just hope that Carson Palmer doesn't die. That's really all I hope.
You know, I talked to a Rams fan the other day, and basically, here's what it is to beat the Rams. If you start fast, you're going to beat the Rams, because they're not a team that can play from behind. So it's really a matter of what do Carson Palmer and the offense, how do they get started? If they get started fast like they have in the first several games, then I really don't think there's anything to worry about. The worry is going to be if it's the second quarter and it's 10-7, and the Rams are able to continue to run the football and set up play action, and, you know, and Todd Gurley is starting to get into the groove of things, and, you know, that's when you have to worry. Because, you know, and God forbid the Cardinals have to play from behind. That just plays into exactly. And that's how the Rams beat the Seahawks in game one. They had to play from behind, and all of a sudden, oh, we're just going to pin our ears back and kill everybody in our path, and that's what happened. So, you know, and this is the one issue with the 3-0 and, you know, 120 however many points, and, you know, only giving up, I think, less than 50 so far, or about 50, that you have this maybe overconfidence from the fan base. I don't think the team worries about it, but I think it's overconfidence from the fan base that this should be easy. Maybe it should be, but what you have to remember is when you have a good defensive line, anything can happen at any time, and, you know, that'll be what's interesting. What happens, you know, can they block Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn consistently? How disruptive will Michael Brockers and Chris Long be? And then, obviously, when Nick Fairley gets rotated in, are the Cardinals going to continue to be able to get a push in the run game? That's kind of what it is that you have to worry about. But like I said, if the Cardinals can play from ahead, there's really not much to worry about, because it neutralizes the Rams' strength, which is the pass rush and running the football. If the Cardinals have to play from behind, that's when things can get, you don't want to say out of hand, but that's when things can get dangerous in the Rams' favor, and not necessarily even winning the football game. That's just when they become a deadly team. It's when they can control the ball and they have a lead, because they can really just pin their ears back and go after you. And that's when they're at their most dangerous.
And Cardinals fans, that'll make it a wrap. We're going to face the Rams this weekend. I don't have it exactly set up, but I will be doing a preview show with Joe McAtee. I believe it will be from Turf Show Times, our SB Nation sister site. But this has been our Arizona our all Cardinals show with Seth Cox. This is Jess Root. Thank you for listening. We will be back on the air for our all Cardinals show again next week. And until then, thanks for listening. Head on over to RevengeTheBirds.com and talk more and read great Cardinals content. Again, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. Have a good night, good day, wherever it are and whenever you are listening.
4-0, here we come.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.